Are you interested in a life in ministry?
Are you passionate about the church and how it functions?
Do you not get enough of listening to pastors on Sundays? Well, you're in the right place. This is Under the Fig Tree, a podcast for people who are interested in church work. I'm Ben.
And I'm Micah. We are two pastors who work at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Join us as we dive into the vocation of pastoral ministry, dig into scripture, and occasionally talk about other stuff, like our unquestionable love for the Dallas Cowboys.
And of course, we'll be talking about Star Wars. We'll talk to guests about doctrine, traditions, and what makes someone a good candidate for the pastoral office, besides being called by God. And we may just help you figure out if this pastor or deaconess stuff is for you.
Again, this is Under the Fig Tree from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody, and welcome again to Under the Fig Tree. I'm your co-host, Reverend Micah Glenn, and of course, I'm joined with the other co-host, Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt. What's going on with you, bro?
Hey, good to be with you, and yeah, soon to be Dr. Micah Glenn. We'll see how that goes, but I'm hopeful for that in your future. So
a few years away, but definitely on the path. What's going on in the Haupt household?
Things are all right. Things are all right. We had some snow, so we enjoyed a snow day. We got to do a little sledding on what is known as Art Hill here in St. Louis. There's an incredible sledding hill in Forest Park, right in front of the Art Museum. And so last night we were doing some sledding, and it was pretty good. It took me back to my days of growing up in Fort Wayne and having lots of snow, and we had a little hill behind our house, and lots of good memories of sledding, and mostly my brother, you know, shoving snow down the back of my snowsuit. So
that's what good brothers are for. You know, it's funny. I was born in Hawaii. We lived in South Carolina, so I didn't move to St. Louis until I was 11, and now I have three kids, and they love playing in the snow, and they always look so lovingly at me and ask me to play, and I have to decline. I'm not sure if that makes me a bad dad, but I just can't. I'm zero interest in playing in the snow, even the sledding. I just can't do it.
That kind of reminds me of a gathering that we were at not too long ago in somebody's backyard here on campus. And it was probably, I don't know, a balmy 45 or 50 degrees. But Micah comes out in his full parka, zipped up to his chin.
Listen, I don't hood like to be on cold.
Mittens. this guy, like, we didn't know who it was because he had his mask on. So we're like, who is this guy? And then, oh yeah, you know, we're all out in our t-shirts and flip-flops. It wasn't quite that stark, but, Micah doesn't love the cold, I think.
It's also kind of shady on that side of the street at that time of day. I'm just going to throw that out there as well. Yeah. Once it drops below 50, I'm uncomfortable outside. And so, from 50 to negative 20, it feels about the same to me.
So what's going on in the sporting world? I heard that there was is it the World Series or the, whatever that thing is for football,
the World Series of the World Football Championships.
that something like that. Yeah. So did the Super Bowl already happen?
It is not quite happened yet, but the stage is set, and it's actually an incredible stage. So on the one hand, you have Patrick Mahomes. He's in his fourth year in the NFL, but only his third year as a starter, and he's going to back-to-back Super Bowls. The kid is 25 years old. If he stays healthy and he plays the way, I don't see his talent dropping off, he could very well be the GOAT by the end of his career. And on the other side, we have the actual present-day GOAT, Tom Brady, going to his 10th Super Bowl, which is preposterous to think, has the opportunity to win his 7th Super Bowl. And Tom Brady now no longer plays in New England, but also plays in Tampa Bay now. And the Super Bowl is hosted in Tampa Bay. This is the first time in NFL history that the home team is also hosting the Super Bowl in their own stadium. I don't think it'll provide much of a home field advantage per se, because there's a lottery for tickets. And of course, because of COVID, it won't be a packed Tampa Bay crowd. But it's just one of those special things, and a kind of a bummer of a year in 2020. To have something like this to look forward to. The fact that they got through the NFL season from start to finish, there were COVID cases, but everybody played all their games. is just a testament to their leadership. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. The other day, Johnny, not unsuccessfully, tried to get me to play Minecraft. We were playing some creative mode. But Johnny, he was on somebody else's server, and he was like, "Can you help me?" And I looked, and I only know from watching, but he was in the Ender and didn't know how to get out. I need you and your boys.
Experience.
Well, he's just surrounded by lava. I was like, I think you're out of there, buddy.
So he was actually in the Nether. He probably wasn't in the Ender, at the Ender Dragon. But you know, if you're not into Minecraft, I can understand. For those of you that think that Minecraft is this niche thing, I just learned the other day that Minecraft has sold 200 million copies of their game. And it is by far and away the most successful video game ever made, by over 100 million. So the next closest is under 100 million, some like Grand Theft Auto or something like that. So if you haven't heard about Minecraft, even if you're not a gamer, you might be living under a rock. So Minecraft is a thing, and it is all the rage. We're going to get our special guest playing Minecraft at some point.
Yeah, so, I live under a rock. Yes.
There you go. he speaks. We'll introduce our guest in a little bit. We're excited to have him. But yeah, we've been playing a lot of Minecraft. We just recently got a Minecraft Realms so that my boys could play with their friends, and that's a lot of fun. Then I'm the weird dad that's playing along too. But it's a ton of fun, and it's challenging, and yeah, it's a fun way to just kind of hang out with my kids. So I think our special guest probably has a lot to say about video games from some conversations with that I've had with him and his son. So without further ado, why don't we introduce him? So our special guest is Leo Sanchez, a faculty member here at Concordia Seminary and a teacher of systematic theology. We'll unpack what that is for our listeners in a few minutes. But Leo, tell us a little bit about who you are. Great to have you on the podcast.
Hey, good to see you all. And this is a very interesting discussion you had. You know, Micah comes from Hawaii. I come from Panama, Central America. So I didn't grow up with snow. But I do remember I was shoveling snow once when I lived at on the seminary campus. And President Dale Meyer walks by and he looks at me, struggling to shovel snow. And he asked, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Cross-cultural module." Because, you know, at the seminary, we try to have people engage in cross-cultural learning. And so that was my cross-cultural learning, you know, shoveling snow. So I've always been fascinated by snow. You know, and then I was listening to you talk about football, and I'm thinking world championship or world series or whatever, you know, like with baseball, everything is world. And I'm thinking that's a pretty small world, you know, that's like up north.
Yeah.
What happened to the rest of the world, you know? So, I mean, it's coming from another country gives you a little different perspective, right? Like we're big on soccer, right?
Yeah.
Because right. When you say World Series of football, in most of the world, that means a soccer ball, soccer, right?
Yeah.
Not a pigskin oval.
But, you know, I do watch the Super Bowl. So yeah. That's my one football game each year. And it's mostly because I want to eat some fun stuff that night.
There is usually a pretty good spread of Super Bowl parties.
I know.
Like when people bring out all their best stuff.
It is.
I get it. And then there are, of course, people who watch it for the commercials. I could do without the commercials personally. Let's see the game. Let's get to it.
And then with the video games, you're right, Ben. My son is a video game design major at the University of Southern California. So I live under a rock. So I let him take care of the game business. You know?
All right.
We're excited to our family in that. We're excited to see what he comes up with. I think it's so important for Christians to be involved in things like video game design and just participating in their vocation in all these different spheres. But that's fascinating. And he's going to a really, really good school. So that's super exciting. So good. Yeah. Well, listeners, we're going to dive into a text today, because we always do that here on Under the Fig Tree podcast. We look at a text of scripture and we kind of use that as then a way to start a conversation around what we're thinking about. So this week we're talking about unlikely candidates to follow Jesus, unlikely candidates to serve Jesus in a professional way. And so what more
resonates
of us
just a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. With
sign me up.
We all have stories, and we're gonna tell some of those stories in a little bit, why we all are unlikely candidates, each in unique ways. Today we want to talk a little bit about the unlikely candidate of Matthew. So the first gospel is named after him, the Gospel according to Matthew. But here is Matthew's story of being called to follow Jesus in Matthew chapter 9, starting at verse 9. It says, as Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. And as Jesus reclined at table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." Came not to call the righteous, but sinners. Sinners like Matthew. Mm-hmm. I've been watching recently The Chosen, this TV series, this TV miniseries, filmed by Dallas Jenkins. And it strongly features Matthew as a character in this story. It's a fascinating take on Matthew, but you see especially how deeply involved he is with Roman politics, and he's clearly the outsider. All the religious people hate Matthew, because though he comes from a Jewish household, he is seen as basically a traitor to the Jewish people, because he's working with the enemies, the Romans, and he's helping the Romans to charge fellow Jewish citizens their taxes. And so very controversial, very, very divisive sort of figure, certainly an unlikely candidate to be a gospel writer and a follower of Jesus.
Well, when I read this text, like many texts, you don't want to make too many assumptions, but also where scripture is not exclusive, don't make it exclusive. This is why we baptize babies, because when they baptized the household, they said baptized. They didn't say, it doesn't say baptize everybody but babies, but it baptized the entire household. And what I'm getting at is that tax collectors, especially in this time, the first century, are kind of seen as scoundrels, often use their position for self-gain and things of this nature. And while we can't overly assume that Matthew was one of these scoundrels, it doesn't say that he wasn't a scoundrel, but he's also listed with the tax collectors and sinners. And this is one of the guys that Jesus calls to be one of his first disciples. And it's just a remarkable testimony, A, for all of us average day guys that become pastors, who have aspirations to be pastors, that if somebody like Matthew and the others can be a pastor, and you ask yourself, is this something that I'm cut out for? Is realizing that without Jesus, the answer is no. But because Jesus is who he is, and that's who we preach and who we lead to, it, who you are and what you've done in a past life or anything like that can become relatively meaningless, because we're all in need of the same doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the implication of this text seems to be that everybody's in need of a physician. So everybody's in need of Jesus.
Yep.
You know, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. And that's kind of a way of putting the Pharisees in their place. And it's interesting because, you know, sometimes I think that there are people who are thinking about serving in some way, but they feel that maybe they are not properly equipped, that, you know, or they come from the wrong part of town, or they didn't get the education that you're supposed to get, or, you know, it's always about being unworthy of the call. And what Jesus is saying here is, you know, I get to make those decisions. I am the one who makes the unworthy, right, a disciple. And I remember, you know, when I was in college back in the day, I'm not going to tell you how long ago that was, but I remember that, you know, I had kind of two different sets of friends and acquaintances and peers, some who really struggle with the church not being perfect. You know, the church has a bunch of hypocrites in there, you know, a bunch of people who are basically not worthy of being there. We got to work on that church and stuff. They were really sort of frustrated by it and offended by it. And then another group were kind of like the tax collectors and the sinners that Jesus is talking about. There was really nothing perceptibly good about these guys. I mean, they were sort of getting in trouble all the time and so on. Now, here's an interesting thing. The ones that everybody saw as kind of being out of it, being kind of unworthy, a bunch of those guys ended up going into service in the church. And a bunch of the guys who thought that the church was not perfect enough were so frustrated by it that they did not go into service in the church. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Micah.
I was just going to say, those who are forgiven much love much. When you understand the consequence of living in sin, you understand the damage that it's doing to people who are struggling with that. You know, we see people in lowly positions and we just assume that they love to be there and they want to be there. And sometimes they just don't know how to escape that kind of lifestyle. So
guess what group I was in?
Well,
we thought you would just tell us because we weren't going to make any assumptions.
Yeah. Probably the same group I was in, be my guess.
There you go.
I love that Matthew describes these people that Jesus is hanging around as sinners. That's a very interesting word, right? It's a very religious sounding word, but I think in the context it was used by the religious people in a very pejorative sense, specifically for people who were not religious or who were anti-religious or who didn't fit the mold and certainly weren't following the commandments and these sort of things. I was just looking before the podcast a little bit later in Matthew. Matthew will record that Jesus at Jesus' betrayal in Matthew 26:45, when Jesus is betrayed, Jesus says, "The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners." So Jesus lets himself be taken up by sinners. Be crucified for sinners, not because he hated those sinners, but he wants to end up in the hands of sinners. Man, isn't that a twist? There's the sinners in the hands of an angry God, but here we have God in the hands of angry sinners. And how amazing it is that Jesus hangs out with sinners, eventually allows himself to be betrayed into the hands of sinners, lets a sinner like Simon the Cyrene carry his cross, and then calls sinners like us to follow him and to preach his word. Well, we'll talk a little bit about our personal stories, but I can certainly relate.
Yeah, and you know, the what's interesting too is that this would have been people like Matthew who were seen as marginal. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't fit into the religious mold. They don't meet the expectations of what it means to be religious and pure and holy and all of this stuff, you know, so they're kind of excluded, right? They're marginalized people. And it's interesting that that's where Jesus picks his disciples from. I mean, if you think about his disciples, they're Galileans. And, you know, whether they're from Nazareth or from Bethsaida or from Cana, it doesn't matter where his disciples come from, but they all come from, you know, that region of Galilee, where supposedly nothing good comes from, right? So we remember in John, the calling of Andrew, and you have Philip in there too, or you have Nathaniel wondering if anything good can come out of Nazareth in Galilee, you know. So Jesus himself would have been seen as a sinner. Jesus himself would have been seen as kind of outside of the religious establishment. You know, Jesus himself would have been seen as the marginal one, as the one who doesn't fit, you know, and he hangs out with sinners. So that also proves it, you see. Mm. So I think this critique goes even to Jesus. Mm. But Jesus shows us, I think, the way that in some ways God works. You know, God works out of, you know, the places that are seen as unholy by the world or in the eyes of the world. And he does his work out of the least likely places and through the least, the most unlikely people.
Right.
And the Bible is full of those stories, you know. So Matthew being giving you one glimpse.
Your words jogged. So, you know, when we there's ordination, everybody has the Bible verse that they memorize as we lay our hands on our new brother in Christ into ministry. And Paul, another unlikely candidate, I think, if there was ever an unlikely candidate, Paul, who was once Saul, is one of them. But in 1 Corinthians 12:9, he says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And so the fact that Jesus saved the world through the ultimate power of weakness, death, just demonstrates, again, the power of God and how he desires to work in the world. It's just put together so perfect to where people like us can step into this position, stumble through it for 40 or 50 years and still be effective for the purpose that God has called us into.
So, Dr. Sanchez, I'm interested to hear a little bit more about your personal journey toward being a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and now a professor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. What was the path like for you to grow up, and tell us a little bit about your upbringing and how you wound up studying for pastoral ministry in Jesus Church?
Yeah, so I'm of the Matthew stock, and you know, I was called by Jesus, though unworthy, to serve his church. I often tell people, you know, I'm a good example of how God works through foolishness to reveal his wisdom, and how God works through weakness to reveal his strength. This is the mystery of the cross, right? But it applies also to the church and to the servants of the church, you know. So, and the way this began was already in Panama. You know, I was born in Chile and I grew up in Panama. But I come from a family that wasn't really involved in the church, but they wanted me to have some kind of connection to it. So I, you know, spent some time among Roman Catholics and Pentecostals, hanging out with, you know, different friends in both communions. But my involvement with the Lutheran Church came through a foreign exchange program. When I was in high school, ended up in Williamsburg, Iowa, population 5,000.
Was that different than Panama?
Yeah, the city of Panama to Iowa. And that's where I saw snow for the first time and watched football games for the first time, by the way. There wasn't a lot of gaming in among the farmers there. But we watched a lot of movies and, you know, ate a lot of deer sticks. You know, the only hunting that we did in the city was in supermarkets. But it was a wonderful, they were the ones who introduced me to the Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And we began a relationship there, and that, you know, there were catechism classes, and ended up being confirmed my senior year of high school in Williamsburg, Iowa. And then that led to Concordia University, Wisconsin, where I was in the pre-seminary program for a while. Then I changed to the theology program. But I really struggled, I think, with the question of whether I should come to seminary. Mm. You know, I think I always felt that I was sort of outside of the right mold. Part of it because, you know, I didn't come from a Lutheran background. Part of it because I came also from a Latin American background where we had no connection to Lutheranism, you know. So I think there were certain, you know, certain things that made me feel, I think, a little bit more like an outsider, you see. And but I experienced the great hospitality of people who were Lutheran, like that family in Iowa. And then other people along the way who really encouraged me to think about ministry, even though I did not feel that I was necessarily equipped to do that. And one of those mentors was actually Reverend Roosevelt Gray. I always call him my spiritual father, right? Who's been, who's had been a leader in African-American and Black ministry in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And along the way, too, encouragement from Douglas Rutt, who used to be area director for Latin America for what used to be LCMS World Mission, and now is provost at Concordia Seminary. I remember Douglas Rutt took me to the first Hispanic National Convention of the LCMS, or conference, whatever it was called back then. We drove together. You know, and then stay at the same hotel and everything so that I could experience and be connected to that community. And that made me feel also that I was, that I had a place, that I was part of a family that included people of different ethnic groups and different cultural backgrounds, and that our Lutheran church also was a church that reflected the Catholicity, the universality of Christ Church, you know. So those were some experiences I had. So, you know, I was being molded little by little into thinking that church work was a possibility.
Well, I'm glad that God grabbed a hold of you and has brought you to this place. Dr. Sanchez, he's not a self-promoter, but he's got two books that people should pick up if you're checking him out on Amazon. At least two, right, Dr. Sanchez?
Yeah.
And
in English.
Oh, there you go. Right. So some of our listeners might be might also have Spanish, and you have written a lot in Spanish as well. So yeah, we're grateful that God has brought you to this place and made you our colleague.
Yeah, no, so, it's been a fun ride.
So, Michael, let's hear your story. What makes you an unlikely candidate for following Jesus and for pastoral ministry?
That's a tough question because I feel like there's a never-ending list, right? You know, it's one thing that gets overlooked just because it's just not a thing that comes up very often is, but I'm a military brat, right? And my dad was a Marine until I was 11. And so I lived on a military base, not to say that I was totally sheltered and had no experience with civilian world, but I didn't live in a civilian world until I was 11. And it's hard to explain to people that living on a military base, although it might be in the United States, is nothing like living in the United States of America. It might as well just be a foreign country to some extent. And so, we did go to Lutheran churches when we could, when my dad was a Marine. I think for the 5 years we lived in Beaufort, South Carolina, we might've gone to like a Presbyterian church or something like that. But just that little nuance of being a military brat adds one thing, but then also, like, you know, when I was 18, I think I might have mentioned this on the podcast before, but just after I graduated high school, church became difficult. It's a tough age. You're going to school, you're trying to figure out life, and sometimes congregations just simply don't have anything congregationally for people that age, something that we should all be thinking about as we're lamenting a generation being gone from the church. But the short story is I just really liked to party as a young person. I would go to the bar all night and wake up 10 minutes before class and speed to get there with crust in my eyes. And I just didn't take school very seriously. I'm not going to say I didn't take my life very seriously. I just had different priorities. And then if you look across the board, this is beginning to change a little bit, but, like, you know, I have tattoos, even on my forearms. When I got to Concordia, Chicago, the campus pastor, that was a tongue twister for some reason, Jeff Leininger, he was like noticing one of my tattoos. He's like, but you're done getting tattoos now, right? I was like, why? I was like, why? I don't get it. And of course I've gotten more tattoos since then. But it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, historically for our synod, I think the image has been like a clean cut. You don't have a beard, but maybe you have a mustache kind of guy, well trimmed. And I'm just not that. I'm a round peg with lumpy sides. You know what I mean? So I don't even go into the circle hole. I think that's perfectly fine from where I'm sitting. But it's just one of those things. Like, you know, apart from being biracial, like, you know, in the LCMS, we're not a very ethnic church to begin with. So I never had any black pastor or any non-white pastor growing up. And so that's another thing that's hard to explain to people is, you know, when you think of yourself in a position as an adult from when you're a kid, you kind of look towards things where you see other people like you who even look like you hold certain positions. And so, I mean, I don't think I met a non-white pastor in the LCMS until college even. So, not just to make ethnicity about it, but again, like even me, like even now, like there are days where it's, you know, I'm a sinner and I wake up, I'm like, man, is, you know, that good old, is that something a pastor should think or say? And then I do what everybody else does. I wipe my hand. No, I'm just messing around. I repent. but yeah, it's just one of those things. I'm just a dude. And that alone, if you've lived life long enough and you've tried enough different things, that'll put you in that mindset where when you think of, at least think of Jesus and that being the prototype, it's like, man, I'm so far from that. How could I ever preach to anybody and do it faithfully from a pulpit and try to hold people accountable when I struggle with some of these things myself? So it's a challenge, but it's a good one.
Yeah. Jesus welcomes sinners.
Yeah. So Ben, from Pentecostal moments to associate provost of our great institution, Concordia Seminary, what makes you an unlikely candidate for ministry?
Well, in some ways, people might look at my last name. It's very German, right? Haupt. kind of hard to pronounce for most people, but very German. I grew up in a Lutheran household. I grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. People might look at me and say, well, he's the most likely candidate for pastoral ministry in the LCMS. And yet, my childhood was tough. I was probably the second most picked on kid in my class. And I would say, you know, certainly my grade school years and even into some of my high school years were nothing less than miserable. I was always the kid that as soon as I opened my mouth, somebody would find something to laugh at me about. And so I had zero confidence when I was in high school. I tried to kind of stay to myself. I had a friend or two that were really, really close, but man, I always tried to stay out of the limelight because I knew that as soon as I was in front of a group of more than two people, somebody was going to find something about what I was saying, and they would find it hilarious and would enjoy and would welcome other people to also join in the laughter at my expense. So I spent
look
a
at
lot
you now,
of
though,
my...
man. Who's laughing now?
Who's laughing now, baby? No, it was a tremendous work of God to take this kid that was all the time in tears as a kid, and for me to stand up in front of a group of people and present or to preach, that was not who I was as a kid. I love connecting with people that have been on, Leo, you talked about being on the margins, or people that have been overlooked, right? I love hanging out with people like that because I know what it feels like to be on the outside of a group looking in, and how difficult that sometimes can be. But I think that it was actually a great gift, right, that God gave me in those experiences, because they shaped and formed and molded me in ways that I love those classmates that maybe gave me a little bit of a hard time. Maybe I probably invited some of my own. I was probably an overly sensitive kid. But I love those experiences because God used the bearing the cross moments, those difficult moments to shape and mold me for work in his kingdom. And so I love to be with people that are hurting. I love to be with people that feel like they have no hope, because I know what that feels like. And for then to know that God reaches down and grabs a hold of people just like that and gives them a hope, gives them a future, forgives them of their sins or their deep shame that they carry, and says, you're mine, and I love you, and I love you the way I've made you. That's a fun thing to be a part of. So that's my story.
And it's interesting how God uses our life experience, you know, which we often see as lacking in so many ways, and he uses that so that we can connect with others and serve others who otherwise would be difficult to reach,
right,
to establish a connection with. So, you know, in some ways, being an outsider because of language and culture and as I like to put it, having an accent, what that does is that then it connects you with, you know, with other people who feel the same way or who come from a similar situation. So a lot of my work over the years has been with immigrant groups, or thinking even theologically about issues like migration, you know, because there has been a real connection with neighbors who come from those backgrounds, because I am a first generation immigrant to the United States. You know, so I think, you know, God can use all of that, and it can bless people through that. And to me, that's a great miracle, you know, that that ultimately it's not even about us, but it's about all the people who are served by our work. So maybe I think it's healthy sometimes to think not so much in terms of, you know, how am I unworthy or how am I not equipped? Maybe that's too much I talk. Maybe sometimes we have to think, how am I a broken vessel, right, who's always going to be lacking in some ways, can be nevertheless used powerfully by God, you know, by His Holy Spirit to shape us and you know, bring us into, you know, those relationships with others. I always remember, I have to tell you this, when my family knew that I was going into ministry or going to seminary in Panama, they actually formed a circle. It was a very communal thing. It was almost strange. Everybody around, the uncles, cousins, and all of that, you know. And so they all went around around the circle and started giving me their best wishes or talking about, you know, events of our lives or whatever. And my father said something that I always remember. He wasn't sure about me going into the ministry, you know. Remember, we didn't come from a church family. But he said this. He says, you know, there will be many generations that will be blessed by you. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And now, all these years in ministry, I have the children of former students sometimes come over and say hi. I end up teaching sometimes.
Look at that.
You know, the children of people who maybe had a place in my life coming into the church. And I have been able to see how the little work that one does out there has begun to bless other people and their lives. And to me, that is a great payoff. You know, it's really a great life to live. So don't let the I doubts prevent you from seeing the, you know, the many ways in which God can use your life experience and your gifts to bless many.
I used to, when I was a missionary in Ferguson, it wasn't like the first look, but like I would wear my clerical sometimes, but I found that there not having the clerical meant more people would be willing to sit down and have conversations. It just kind of changed the dynamic. But especially when I was wearing short sleeves, people would walk in and they'd always first be like, wait, you're the pastor? Because they would see the tattoos and everything else like that. I'm like, yeah, man, just chill, bro. I got it. what's going on? But then in the conversation, being able to tell, like, because I grew up not far from where I was working. And so, like, my dad was a Marine for 20 years. And when he retired, unfortunately, he was disabled. So in the Marine Corps, he was an air winger plane mechanic. And they're like, oh, you know, when you retire, you'll be able to take a job at Boeing or something like that. And my dad had a difficult choice. He could have maybe started to work at Boeing, but he could see the writing on the wall that he was beginning to be too crippled to continue to be a plane mechanic because he has rheumatoid arthritis. So he chose disability instead. And so financially, we struggled, especially in the very early years. You know, my dad, neither my parents had college degrees when my dad retired. And so at some point, my dad decided to go back and get his bachelor's degree. And my mom was a bank teller making like, you know, $8 an hour or something like that. And we're a family of seven. And so I used to have to tell people, it's like, I'm not in your shoes now. But believe me, I know what it's like to be hungry. And I'm not talking about like, oh, I'm hungry, like, let's go look in the fridge. I'm talking about hungry and there not being anything in the fridge. Right. And it was always one of those, it's like, so I've been I've been close to where you are today, and these are the types of things that I did to move on, and this is how God has helped me. Even in the hunger, so it's not just a spiritual thing, but it's also a physical thing and an emotional thing. But being able to sit down and, like you said, empathize with people because you've been there before, is a powerful thing. That's why, again, the need for so many different people that are not just unlikely candidates, but unlikely candidates for different reasons. That's why we need people to become pastors, just because you have no idea the type of people you're going to connect with just because of what you struggled with in life.
Yeah, and I think what I hope listeners take away from is A, that obviously there are lots of different stories out there of what makes someone an unlikely candidate to come study at Concordia Seminary or to study theology or to prepare for professional church work. But no matter what your story is or what you think might hold you back, I actually think it's important to lean into those things, because those are oftentimes exactly the places where God will use to prepare us for service to other people, like you were saying, Dr. Sanchez, to keep us away from the I, thinking too much about ourselves. We get tied up thinking about ourselves, and instead we're thinking about the other. So, listener, we hope that this has been a helpful episode. We're looking forward to being back with you for another podcast episode of Under the Fig Tree soon. In the meantime, reach out to us. Let us know what you're thinking about, and God bless you in your journey forward.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Under the Fig Tree. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus shows his followers how to care for his people. Oftentimes, this includes sharing the word in intimate moments of personal conversation, like the Samaritan woman at the well. At other times, it's sharing the word with crowds, like the Sermon on the Mount. Sometimes, it's just being there for people when they are experiencing the worst moments of life, like when Jesus was there for Jairus when his daughter died.
It's gathering his disciples around a table of bread and wine to hear, "This is my body. This is my blood." Whether it's as a deaconess sharing the word with the sick, or as a pastor preaching the word and administering the sacraments, being there for people at these intimate moments in life is something that Jesus is calling many more people to do. In Under the Fig Tree, we want to bring you into these moments with us, and maybe you begin to see yourself in one of these roles or feel yourself being called into service of the church. If you want to find out more about what it means to be a pastor or deaconess, visit us at csl.edu. And of course, keep listening to Under the Fig Tree.